Welcome one and all to another day here at The Damage Report. I'm John Iadarola, very lucky to be joined as per usual on a Monday by host of The Bituation Room, Francesca Fiorentini. Francesca, how's it going?
Hey, it's going. It's going good. It's going great.
That is precisely how someone describes a scenario that is not going good.
Everything is fine.
It's good. It's good. It's good.
Everything's normal. It's great. Don't search my house. Why would you?
What are you hiding? Do you have some sort of like octagonal balloon that you're prepared to deploy over LA or something? What's going on?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, I'm just going to walk around the halls of Congress with the octagonal balloon going like, why won't there be an investigation? Like, see, here's that's okay.
Well, if we're going to talk about the balloon.
We will. Okay, I'm saving it. Save it for the pod.
You save it. Everyone else save the inevitable reality that many people for Halloween are going to go as a balloon. Anyway, hold on. There's a great comment. So there's a lot of very excited people to see here. Mind Grifter says hostage video energy, Francesca. She doesn't have to be here. She could go. Anyway, I'm glad that she didn't though, because we do have a lot to talk about. Not only the updates on the balloons, which is that every balloon in America has been shot down by the Air Force recently, but also new revelations. Donald Trump's investigation has hired experts to look into voter fraud, and we're going to evaluate what they found. Did they prove 2,000 mules or not? Did they maybe find 1,000 mules? Maybe 12 mules? We're gonna figure it out together. And then we got a bunch of other stuff. Steve Bannon, like, taking a page out of Donald Trump's book. By the way, Donald Trump has some updated insults and nicknames for Ron DeSantis, which I think are a pretty big improvement over his initial set. I thought those were weak sauce. This is a little bit better. And then we're going to get into in the aftermath. We're dedicating this aftermath to the kids, specifically kids who might not want to get married at 12 or work sweeping chimneys at 13. So we're going to talk about both of those things. And with all that said, please hit the like button, share the stream so people know we're live. Also, just in case, hope that you are joining us on our live pre-port, which happens every day in the lead up to the Damage Report. So 9:30 a.m. Pacific time, 12:30 p.m. Eastern time at youtube.com/thedamagereport. We hang out, we talk about a few little news stories that we don't have time to fit on the full show, have a little bit of fun, so definitely join us there. And if you want to send us any comments, tweets, or super chats, you can do that, both to give us a little giggle, maybe win a Blue Apron gift card. We'll have to see. But with all that said, Francesca, are you ready to start the show? If people think that you're a hostage, that isn't gonna help me out here.
I'm a hostage to my child, you guys.
Sure, okay. No, I was gonna say, as an ode to the new season of You, she's in a glass cage. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna talk about some news, starting with this. In the immediate aftermath of the 2020 election, we now know Donald Trump and his team hired a group of outside experts to research the election results in 6 different states to try to find literally any voter fraud, anything they could find. And since this is the first time you're probably hearing about this, what do you think they found? Amazing evidence? Maybe not so much. Let's get into what actually happened. The group is the Berkeley Research Group. They were hired to study the 2020 election results in 6 different states, and they were given a very wide purview of things to look into, including voter machine malfunctions, instances of dead people voting, any evidence that could help Trump show he won, literally almost anything. None of the findings were presented to the public. None of them were used in the literally dozens of court cases that Donald Trump was involved in the 2 to 3 months following the 2020 election. According to the 4 different sources that were cited by the Washington Post in this reporting, they looked at everything. Change of address, illegal immigrants, ballot harvesting, people voting twice, machines being tampered with, ballots that were sent to vacant addresses that were returned and voted. Quote, literally anything you could think of. Voter turnout anomalies, date of birth anomalies, whether dead people voted. If there was anything under the sun that could be thought of, they looked at it. And the findings were, of course, as you can probably tell by now, not what the Trump camp was actually looking for. The researchers do believe that there were some voting anomalies and unusual data patterns in a few states, along with some instances in which laws may have been skirted. But they didn't believe the anomalies were significant enough to make a difference in who won the election in literally any of these places, let alone the many simultaneous places that would have had to change for Donald Trump to have been declared the winner of the 2020 election. And so of the more than a dozen hypotheses that they tested, nothing significant was found. Now, there's some added drums they're gonna develop from that. But sure. Francesca, what do you think about the results?
Yeah, homie had the weight of the entire Justice Department on his side to do the investigating. You guys, one of my favorite tidbits from the January 6th committee hearings was the fact that like you had attorneys generals and all of their like minions in the DOJ, they were all like being sent YouTube videos from random Trump lackeys going like, well, I guess we have to figure out what Italygate is now. And they were doing it. They were imagine you just dream up a conspiracy. You're like, you know what? Get on the lizard people. Wanna bet we're gonna find out Trump did send the DOJ to investigate lizard people. And they're like, oh my God, but also Bill Barr's ahead of it. So like that's sort of weird because it's like a conflict of interest, you know, because he is an actual iguana. But like, so what I'm saying is it's like I love that they had to go to like a third party and another person. And you guys remember Cyber Ninjas? That was another group that was in Arizona that was
not
like
as cool as the name would imply.
Right. Super not as cool, probably because they did their ninja and guess what? They found out that Joe Biden won by even more votes. Stupid. So yes, of course, this is why we're hearing about it now. We're gonna hear more things. I'm sure there's more people who were paid money to do this.
Yeah, I think that the Trump team made a couple of classic mistakes. So they relied on ninjas, which I think we can all agree are a shady bunch. I wouldn't have relied on them. And then
easy
he relied
on them.
That's true. They come at the election fraud one at a time.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then he turned to academics to look into it. I mean, you know, they're all bought off by Soros. So what did you expect, Trump? But anyway, in the end, senior researchers from Berkeley Research Group had to present the findings. And they did so on a phone call. And I want to be very clear. This did not just have people like Mark Meadows and others, the aides. Donald Trump was on this phone call. And that is very important going forward in ways that we will discuss. So they discussed what they found. Meadows showed skepticism of the findings and continued to maintain that Trump won. Always the sign of intellectual honesty and an open, curious mind when you hire experts to conduct vigorous research and it does absolutely nothing to change your opinion. So that was Meadows. Trump also continued to say he won the election. The call grew contentious, they say. And I bet it did. I bet there was some elevated voices. I bet there might have been a few F-bombs coming from Trump. And coming out of it, of course, what is important to know is that it did nothing to change the statements they were making about election fraud. Not only did they not modify the arguments they were making, they never even acknowledged publicly that this research project had gone on, which I think is the single most damning thing about this. Like, it would be one thing if he were to mention it and then say that they're failures and their ratings are bad, so don't listen to them. But they buried the evidence of it for more than 2 years at this point, going on 2.5 years. And they continue to lie about everything. And everybody was reached out to for comment on this. And of course, Donald Trump isn't saying anything. Mark Meadows isn't saying anything. But they did have a spokesperson. Stephen Chung, spokesperson for Trump, said President Trump received a record-breaking 74 million votes. Mm-hmm. Well, record-breaking except for the one other one. Uh-huh. Anyway, the most of any sitting president in the history of the country. You mean then temporarily sitting president, right? Because he wasn't president a couple months. Anyone who takes a look at Joe Biden glitching through his presidency knows who really won the election.
Glitching?
I don't even know what that's supposed to mean. It's probably a lizard person, a cyber lizard person.
You know what
it
means.
Wait, what is it?
He's a hologram. Q told us in the Q drop 7530.
That was a good one.
It was a really good one.
But anyway, here's why. One last thing about why I think this is important, because what we have discovered as a nation, I don't know, maybe people who follow a lot of true crime already knew this. What we've discovered as a nation, when it comes to things like the insurrection, when it comes to things like the document scandal, simply breaking the law, irrelevant. It doesn't matter at all. It's all about your mind, your frame of mind, your state of mind, your motivations and all that. And the only way we can get you for obviously indisputably breaking the law is if we prove that you knew that what you were doing was based on fabrications. Well, I think there was already robust evidence to prove that. But now we know that before the insurrection, he had commissioned and gotten the results of a comprehensive research project that looked into these claims and told him in no uncertain words, the election wasn't stolen. So this is even one more thing to log into what did he actually know about the claims he was making. Maybe this will make some kind of difference when it comes to Jack Smith. What do you think,
Francesca? It's very interesting to me that the right thinks that liberals, Democrats, the left, socialists, that they're all fragile and that like they need safe spaces and their fifis get hurt and this and that. And yet they cannot take a hard look at reality, and they base their entire worldview on, I feel like he won, but I feel like it. I feel like the Eagles won last night in the Super Bowl. Yeah, that's cute. You can feel any way you want, but they didn't. You know, like, and so their entire political movement is based on their gut. Well, my gut says, no, sorry. I mean, gut health is very important. But kombucha cannot find you 11,000 votes in Georgia.
No, it would have to be a very potent brew of kombucha to accomplish that. Anyway, so we'll see if this sways any of the Trump supporters. I'm gonna guess no. No, because again, fifis need to be respected, okay? I do think that it's important for people to look after their mental health. Of course, they would say that it isn't, and that is, as Francesca says, a sign of like being weak or having a bad constitution or something like that. But it is interesting how much work they do to weed out and avoid inconvenient facts to maintain their mental well-being. Anyway, with that said, that is not the only news. That might be the only important news taking place on Earth, but above Earth, big things have been happening. So let's transition now into this. All this last weekend, the US military has been shooting down all sorts of stuff in the air. And I say that because nobody seems to know what any of the objects are. Most recently, yesterday, the US military shot down an object over Lake Huron in Michigan. The latest takedown of an unidentified vessel flying over North America in the last week, which is a great, like it's an honest way of describing it, but it's also so vague that it definitely sounds like aliens are invading. I think a lot of people come to that conclusion, and I will not try to dissuade you. What I will do is show you where they're invading from. So if you look at this graphic, and kudos to Business Insider for adding in the alien imagery there. So on Friday, you have one over Alaska, Saturday over Canada, later Saturday, Montana. Sunday, there's the octagon that was shot down over the Great Lakes. It really does look like, you know, these are distinct objects, right? They shot down four different objects. Why are they getting further east the later into the weekend we go? One would think after each shooting, we would be more vigilant on the West Coast. But anyway, the Department of Defense clarified that the most recent object, the octagonal unidentified object, its path and altitude raised concerns, including that it could be a hazard to civil aviation, but noted that it did not appear to pose a kinetic military threat to anything on the ground. So again, I just love the language we're all being exposed to in these trying times. So Alaska, Canada, Michigan, Francesca, four different objects over like three different days. Nobody knows what they are, but they know that they need to die. What do you think?
I mean, we gotta be careful. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, if they're aliens, my bad. You know what I mean? Like, sorry, ooh, your thingy, ooh, it broke. You know,
your thingy.
Don't invade us. You know, and also like,
oh, there's another object in the air. It's spinning.
It's very scary that we're just shooting. I don't think we should just be shooting objects in the sky, like, because you know, maybe that could pose a risk. Maybe the shooting of the object might pose a risk to flights in the area. Yeah. But it is very curious that all of a sudden, I mean, Marjorie Greene will take credit for all of these because she's like, see, I told you. And in some ways, she's not wrong. Because why is it that suddenly that the right is getting on the Chinese balloon thing, that now we're finding all these objects and we're shooting them down? And so like we're kind of proving them right. Like I just maybe just roll them out a little slower, you know?
Yeah, look, I think she will claim it. And I think it probably is due to her, not just her. The whole right freaked out about it and then promptly ignored the fact that these balloons had been cruising over the US during Trump too. But no, they freaked out, and now Joe Biden is terrified that if anyone spots a balloon before we send it to hell, that he will be criticized. and so it has to be shot down. Should they be shot down? I don't know. I would argue they don't know either because they don't know what they are. At least they're not telling us. Maybe they're surveillance balloons. Maybe in the wake of Balloongate, lots of people just sent balloons into the air. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I doubt they're aliens. I wish that they were, but that would be cool. And nothing is allowed to just be cool in 2023. So I sort of doubt it. In any event, it does suck that our national security strategy, our like homeland defense strategy, is being affected not by like, you know, the best information, expert analysis, blah, 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 but whatever the woman in the chinchilla coat bitched about most recently. That is frustrating for a powerful country.
It's true. It's very true. I mean, I think it'd be cool. Like, don't break it yet. That's the whole thing. Like, you see something unidentified, interesting, random. Can't you just fly alongside it? Can't you see what it is? Can't you like research it? But no, they're like somehow coaxing it over bodies of water, you know, with just like
hey,
a little
balloon,
bit of
ew, here.
Well, string cheese. I don't know what it likes. I don't know like what octagons eat, and then they're shooting it down and they're like, well, and I'm like, my question is, I read about this and it's like, okay, are they retrieving it? Where, how are they retrieving it? Doesn't seem like they are. Are we following up on this, or are we just gonna let it go and be like, I shot down more rhombuses than any president.
I don't know. I mean, look, realistically, they're gonna recover whatever they can. They're gonna analyze it and never tell us anything. They'll tell us whatever is opportunistic to them. And it might be true, it might be a lie, God only knows. But anyway, yeah, I found the entire thing frustrating. The only fun part of it really is that they're leaving the door open for some fun public speculation about the nature of these objects. So the Daily Beast says, suspicions have grown about whether shooting down alien linked objects is what's going on, which is a fine bit of speculation to fill tweets and TikTok videos and stuff like that. But they received a bit of a boost when the commander of NORAD and US NORTHCOM, General Glenn Van Herk, declined to rule out alien origins and deferred comment to the intelligence community, saying, I'll let the intel community and the counterintelligence community figure that out. I haven't ruled out anything at this point. We continue to assess every threat or potential threat unknown that approaches North America with an attempt to identify it. Also goes on to say, I'm not gonna categorize them as balloons. We're calling them objects for a reason. They're very, very small and produce a very, very low radar cross section. So maybe like a two-seater spaceship or something, you know, something in like the classic 60s, 70s UK school of vehicle design. I don't know.
Or the Simpsons school of design. I mean, I just wanna know, like, are any of them time travelers? Are they here to pick up their experiment, Donald Trump? Like, are they like, you know, take them away.
We should let one land just in case.
Let them land. First of all, if they were Chinese, this is my suspicion. If they were Chinese, we would know about it immediately. So that's why you're like, I don't know. I don't think it's a balloon. Anyway, well, there's more.
So Beijing confirmed that the first one was. What the others are, God only knows. What we do know though is China is now also saying that at least 10 US balloons have flown in its airspace since 2022. The United States denies this allegation, not just the specific allegation. They say we do not do surveillance balloons.
BS.
I think there's probably room in the defense budget for some balloons if I had to guess.
Well, there are. What was it? 600 billion, John? Was it almost 700 billion?
I think it's more like 700. I think it's more than 700, but
that's
in any
a lot
event,
of balloons,
they wouldn't tell
guys.
Us. Realistically, no, here is what's going on.
Yes.
They apparently are a thing and they're definitely there. And also, like, we have satellites and we have planes. Like, we obviously are surveilling each other. It is going to be pointless.
No, but we have balloons. We dedicated, it's something like $170 million, not a lot. We have spy balloons as well. There is a balloon cold war happening. And apparently there's a balloon gap, as they're talking about, between the US and China. So now, not only we gotta work on our light rail, not only do we have to work on, you know, just like not invading other countries as much, but now we gotta work on our balloon game because there's a balloon gap. So maybe, you know, again, once again, all in the service of this Cold War.
Yeah. You know what I'm worried about?
What?
Mutually assured pop. Anyway.
Very good.
Again, the thing is, my final point on this is My gut would be, and I don't have any insider information, obviously, about this. People at the DOD don't return my calls. But my guess would be that we fly balloons over them, they fly balloons over us, we fly balloons over literally everyone. Russia does the same thing, probably other countries too. And I don't know, I guess I'm a dumb lefty that thinks that we should be consistent. And if we're doing it, then we can't be that like aggrieved about them doing it. But that's not gonna work on people like Marjorie Greene. She would admit this. She would want us to have balloons over them and then not to have them over us. And just would assume that maintaining that policy wouldn't have any negative ramifications going forward.
And the sea turtles are the ones that lose every time.
Exactly. Yeah, the extended family of Mitch McConnell is gonna suffer in the end as a result of this.
Indeed.
Yeah. Okay, with that said, we're gonna take our first break. We'll be keeping our eyes on the skies, don't worry, but we have other important news to get to, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. We're still in the fairly immediate aftermath of the train derailment in East Palestine, and residents there would love to know what the hell is going on and what is gonna happen to clean it up and to compensate the people living in the area that have been affected by a number of chemicals that we know about and others that we don't necessarily know about yet. So more than a week after the Norfolk Southern train derailed, causing an explosion that sent flames into the air that was then buttressed by the intentional burning of remaining chemicals there, there was a cloud of potentially toxic smoke that swept over the area. People tell the Post that they have yet to see a full list of the chemicals that were aboard the train when it lost its course. Now that list has increased over time. So we already knew about vinyl chloride, apparently butyl acrylate. And now is the part of the story where I'm gonna attempt to pronounce these things that I'm in no way trained to do so. But they are important, so we do need to know about them. So I'm gonna say ethylene glycol monobutyl, ethyl hexyl acrylate, and isobutylene. Those are all potentially toxic things that apparently could be sweeping over the area, and we don't yet know if that's the extent of the list. Now, who would know? I'm gonna guess the company that was shipping them would know exactly what was on that train. It seems like it would take maybe 15 minutes to get the full manifest and to release it. But as with so many things, Norfolk Southern, which wants you to believe that it is an active participant in trying to help people out with their little donation of like $50,000 or something. I think it might've been $25,000 so far. Is also playing their cards a little bit close to the chest when it comes to these sorts of chemicals, which is leaving a lot of people in the area and not just the immediate area to wonder what is going on to nature. Dead fowl have been spotted in waterways. Residents returning to homes in a neighboring Pennsylvania town were advised by state officials to open up their windows, turn on their fans, and wipe down all surfaces with diluted bleach, which is a horror show that far away. The very surfaces could be contaminated by whatever it is that's flowing through the windows. Some nights, one resident told the Post, the air smells like an over-chlorinated swimming pool and his eyes burn. He says he can't move his family of five out of the home, so he says he has no choice but to stay put and follow authorities' instructions. For a small town, we have to trust them, because what else do we have to do? We have to trust that they are not lying to us, and maybe they're not. But if you've paid attention to history, maybe they very much are. Maybe there's worse stuff in the air. Maybe they don't know exactly what's in the air, but I would be very worried if I was a human, if I was an animal in that area, Francesca, very rough situation going on.
No, it's unthinkable and it's scary and it happens way too often. And yes, it is time obviously to talk about the railroad company owners and workers' rights and all of the ways that when you bolster workers' rights, you're also protecting communities that these railways go through, right? If there's no way to hold them accountable, everyone is just Mr. Burns, like trying to hide toxic materials in random small towns. And that's exactly what's happening. And yes, it's great we're covering it now, but we have to keep following up on this in 3 months, in 6 months, in 2 years, in 10 years, when we see like the rates of cancer and whatnot. But here's the thing, if you're gonna have unfettered capitalism throughout the United States and you love it and you say, yay, corporations should have all the tax breaks, they should do whatever they want and all the, do you know all that acrylic was going to like, fake nails in New Jersey. So hey, it's an industry, it's a business. Hey, there's a lot of nail. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, it went, this is sealant for decks. I don't know, think of it. If you're gonna deprioritize human life over those toxic chemicals, then at least have a goddamn contingency plan when things like this happen, meaning move people out of their homes, put them up in a hotel where it is safe to stay, give them drinkable water. Don't just tell them, hey, open the windows and wipe your baby down with bleach. Like, how ridiculous. What kind of country do we live in?
Your baby town. Yeah. Look, jokes aside, it's, you know, it's devastating.
Yeah.
It's devastating right now for the things that are dying. And then I think a lot of people's thoughts immediately turn to, what the hell are we going to find out about this in 1 year, in 5 years, in 15 years, when we find out that some sort of cluster of a variety of cancers or liver failure or God knows what developed in this area. And this appears to be just another case where these companies get to whatever extent we allow them to, offload the cost of doing business onto all of us.
Yep.
If that railroad company's profits had suddenly shot up by 1,000%, it's not like they'd be sending dividends to all the people along the train route or anything like that. And yet, when it goes in the opposite direction, something devastating happens. It's us that's gonna have to pay, almost certainly. Maybe it's the localities, the states, maybe the federal government gets involved. Maybe they force Norfolk Southern to get involved. But does anyone think that they're going to be like picking up the entirety of this? Like, who thinks that they are definitely going to try to weasel out of as much of it as possible?
Yeah, exactly. And you right, it's the privatizing of the profits and socializing of anything that goes wrong, socializing of the disaster. And this is where the libertarian ideology falls up effing part, which is they believe that, like, out of the goodness of Mr. Burns's heart, he's gonna clean up the mess that he makes, because otherwise then no one would move to East Palestine, right? Yeah. And then, like, no, man, no one's forcing these corporations to clean up other than, we think they might, the EPA and bodies of government. Those are the only people that can actually bring corporations in line. They're it's the only regulating body. Oh, the power of the market, because then nobody, like, it'll be a bad, no, man, we're gonna forget about this tomorrow.
I mean, that's entirely possible. We're gonna hopefully stick on it here. We're gonna see what happens in terms of national media and all that. And we're going to remind people that there is a lot that could have already been done. There's a lot that can be done in the future in terms of regulations on what sort of chemicals can actually be transported, what sort of braking system you have. Those are things that the government could have been more involved in, but didn't. And I'm sure that there was nothing corrupt whatsoever about it.
Look, Chinese spy balloon, if you're watching, just give us some hints about how we can improve our rail system. You know, you do it, you crush it over there on the mainland, you know what I'm saying? What's up? So just,
and by the way, no, I'm glad that you're joking about the balloon or whatever. Remember, like, Marjorie, everybody freaking out, like, there could be a biotoxin on it. Man, there was a biotoxin on that train, and now it's in the air. Again, could we, like, I understand that it's fun to engage in hypothetical fear mongering, but let's do some fear mongering grounded in reality just briefly. How about that? Anyway. With that said, another story to keep your eye on. We will see what happens. For now, though, we're gonna move to our next story. At various points, Steve Bannon has been more or less in the orbit of Donald Trump, sometimes very close advisor, sometimes more on the outs. He seems to be moving a little bit, maybe more in his direction right now. But along the way, he also appears to have picked up some Donald Trumpian characteristics. And one very notable one is refusing to pay people for the work they do for you. According to sources, Bannon owes significant sums of money to his attorneys, M. Evan Corcoran of Baltimore, Robert Costello of New York City. They, along with David Schoen of Montgomery, Alabama, spent months battling the DOJ back in 2021 and 2022. Representative Steve Bannon at a trial in Washington, D.C. last summer, when he was eventually convicted of contempt of Congress, and seemed to have worked their butts off to make sure that that didn't happen. But despite that, he is not paying them for the work they did. And apparently, according to people who know him, they're very surprised by that, because he is someone who is known to have a lot of money, as we'll get into. At one point late last summer, he apparently owed the lawyer Robert Costello alone more than $100,000. He apparently still owes Costello what's being described as a ton of money. And so remember, this is a guy who he's been involved with finance. He gets money off of Seinfeld, which bothers me to this day. This is a guy who has access to money. $100,000 is something he definitely could afford to hand over. And this isn't just like some guy that he briefly worked with, whatever. These are lawyers that he has a history going back that have represented him in multiple different concerns that have opened themselves up to potential investigations as well. And by the way, he has ongoing legal concerns that they're still gonna have to be adjudicated when it comes to him fleecing MAGA people for their fake scheme to build the border wall or whatever. There are a lot of different reasons that he would seem to be a guy who'd want to stay on the good side of his lawyers, and yet he's apparently not paying them, Francesca.
Yeah, and you gotta wonder, like, I feel like the Trumpian years are a lesson in keeping your lawyers happy. I mean, look, Rudy Giuliani is on some next level. Like, you can pay me in, again, Kirkland handles of whiskey, so that's over here. And like, not even like a full bottle, just like a half drunk, he'll take it. But the rest of them, like, look at Michael Cohen flipping, right? The another lawyer, God, there's so many lawyers, but his name is like they are all going to bat for Donald Trump. They're being hauled out in front of Congress and hauled out in front of, like, they're being implicated in investigations. Same thing's gonna happen to Steve Bannon, right? So where's the lawyer gonna be at? You better keep him close. But again, man, white male privilege, right? White rich male privilege. You just write a bunch of IOUs on like Brooks Brothers neckties and that, whatever.
Depending on the tie, if it's one of Trump's ties, you could probably fit a lot of text on there.
Exactly.
Anyway.
My signature will be worth a lot in the future. You can sell it on eBay.
The lawyers have declined to comment. You know, maybe they don't want to give him even more reason to not pay them. They're probably hoping to get that money eventually. That would be nice. Bannon has refused to say anything. The only person who could be reached for comment is Hunter Biden, who is threatening to sue both Steve Bannon as well as a Chinese exile who has been financially backing Steve Bannon. He's apparently looking into suing both of them. I did want to throw this out there too. While we were looking up this stuff on Steve Bannon, it turns out that even amongst right wingers who love to fill their shows with nonsense and disinformation, mm-hmm. Steve Bannon apparently has not been getting the cred that he deserves. Researchers at Brookings, according to the Seattle Times, downloaded and transcribed nearly 36,000 podcast episodes from 79 different political talk shows that have been released before January 22nd of last year. And when they compare the show's transcripts against a list of keywords and common falsehoods identified by fact checkers, they found that nearly 20% of Bannon's War Room episodes contained a false, misleading, or unsubstantiated statement, more than shows by other conservatives like Glenn Beck and Charlie Kirk. Overall, about 70% of the podcasts reviewed had shared at least one false or misleading claim. Conservative podcasters were, get this, 11 times as likely as liberal podcasters to share a claim that fact checkers could refute. And others had a bunch of lies or whatever, but apparently Steve Bannon stood out even amongst that great competition.
And 11 times as likely to be sponsored by Squarespace. Hey,
true. Yep.
For all of your lies, just organize them in a beautiful little website. That being said, guys, Bituation Room is my podcast. John's wearing the shirt. You guys know that I only lie to you for a good cause. All right.
Yeah, she's willing to stretch things a little bit more. She's 5 times more likely than the regular leftist podcaster.
Yeah, exactly.
Still more reliable than Rudy Giuliani's cameos. Okay. And monthly membership doesn't cost as much as one of his cameos.
No.
But anyway, let me give you the last bit of information that they shared. Kirk ranked second, Charlie Kirk, with 17% of his episodes containing an unsubstantiated or false claim. The Rush Limbaugh show and the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton show placed third, while the Michael Savage show ranked fourth. And I want to be very clear about how this works in terms of the methodology. When they say contained a false claim, they mean of the specific ones that were being searched for. I would bet every cent I've ever had and every cent I will ever have that in the other episodes, there were other unsubstantiated claims. Okay, I'm fairly confident about that. But they, of course, they're not evaluating everything that's said. They come up, they go into it with a specific list, and that's what they're evaluating it based on, which is the right way to go about it. In any event, Francesca, I think it's time for us to take our second break. We come back. Donald Trump's insults towards Ron DeSantis have, they've not been that great, but he's been working on it. He's now workshopping some new nicknames. We're gonna evaluate them after this. Ganja Goddess Dragon has a theory. The subs may go to members whose subscription has expired via Prime or something and haven't yet resubbed. So maybe they are temporarily members, but would not continue to be members if the membership wasn't gifted to them. I don't know. I have no idea. But we should do some Googling and see if YouTube has talked about bugs and stuff like that. We've definitely had bugs with going live sometimes, especially on mobile. We used to have that really weird bug where whenever the pre-port hit 1,000 likes, the stream would crash, but only on my Google Pixel 2 phone. That's a weird bug, and I tested it multiple times. I got that group that looked into the election fraud to test it. Anyway, they came back with some results, but I don't trust them. Anyway, with that said, we've got a lot to talk about, so let's jump into this next story. I'm not yet ready to say that the fight between Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis won't include any substance. There is some evidence, in fact, that they will be talking a lot about Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and that will be great. But we all know that the majority of their interactions are going to be insults, and most of that is going to be coming from Trump and directed at Ron DeSantis, which means that if it is going to be a battlefield that is waged with the weapons of insults and nicknames, you want him to have the best ones possible. And so far, what Donald Trump has sent at Ron DeSantis, aside from some accusations of pedophilia, is Ron DeSanctimonious, which is just not great. That's D plus at best.
Nobody knows what sanctimonious means.
I barely do.
So he just Googled like words that begin with sand. Yes,
exactly.
Sandy, no.
The Sandman, he's always sleepy.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was phase one. That was the beta testing or whatever. And one of those he'll test is calling him a beta, just wait. Anyway, Trump has been working on it. He's come up with some new ones. So here are the new burns, okay? In casual conversations, he has called Ron DeSantis Meatball Ron.
Okay, solid, solid.
An apparent dig at his appearance.
Yes.
Now, I don't have any more details about what that's intended to mean. I am guessing that that's an insult at Ron DeSantis's weight, that he's shaped like a meatball.
No, it's his face. He's got like that squidgy, sweaty face going on.
I'm gonna look up a photo of Ron. Can we put up Ron DeSantis' B-roll?
He looks like a meatball.
Can we get Ron DeSantis' B-roll?
No, it's gotta be this one. He's trying to smile.
Oh, well, that one he does have kind of a perfectly spherical head. Yes, that is true.
He looks like a meatball.
Anyway, I just think, glass meatballs, man. That's all I'm saying. I'm not gonna get any more specific. Glass meatballs. Anyway, so Meatball Ron. So that's the personal one, and I'm gonna guess that Trump is gonna stick with the personal ones, but he does have a substantive insult, Shut Down Ron, a reference to restrictions the governor put in place at the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic. Now, I do wanna debate those in a moment, but first, we have yet to really see how Ron DeSantis is going to respond to these sorts of things. Now, when he was called a pedophile, he said, I'm gonna focus on giving results to the blah, blah, something Biden. That's all he did. But we haven't yet seen them on the debate stage just yet. What we do have is Ron DeSantis facing a far less vicious competitor in his gubernatorial run. And I was reminded of this actually by, I think it was Insider reminded me of this, an interaction between Charlie Crist and Ron DeSantis. And I want you to take a look, especially at the facial expressions of Ron DeSantis as he's being challenged on stage. Take a look at this.
Ron, you talk about Joe Biden a lot. I understand. You think you're going to be running against him. I can see how you might get confused, but you're running for governor. You're running for governor, and I have a question for you. You're running for governor. Why don't you look in the eyes of the people of the state of Florida and say to them, if you're reelected, you will serve a full 4-year term as governor. Yes or no? Yes or no, Ron? Will you serve a full 4-year term if you're reelected governor of Florida? It's not a tough question. It's a fair question. He won't tell you.
We did not agree on the candidates asking each other questions. Governor, it's your turn.
Well, listen, I know that Charlie's interested in talking about 2024 and Joe Biden, but I just want to make things very, very clear. The only worn out old donkey I'm looking to put out to pasture is Charlie Crist.
Okay, so he called him a worn out old donkey. That's fine or whatever. That's good. He clearly had written that like 6 weeks ago and was waiting to deploy it.
Yeah.
But when Charlie Crist challenged him, he just did this. Is it my time yet?
I have a line.
That's Charlie Crist. He is a worn out old donkey. Donald Trump is going to be setting fire to his skeletal system. Like it is going, the attacks are becoming fast and furious. And most importantly, deranged, utterly deranged attacks. You are not going to just be able to like quiver a little bit and ask if it's your turn to talk about something else. That is not going to save you against Donald Trump.
Also, I really think that calling Donald Trump anything close to a worn out old donkey, which I would love to see someone do,
broken down old Trump,
very much gonna backfire. Like, DeSantis is gonna have to go hard in the paint at Trump, and he won't, because he doesn't want to alienate the base that he wants to win over, which is the former Trump base. You're just trying to wrest the baton from Trump's just tiny little thingies, you know, but they're just gripping so hard, like, but you can't break the baton. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't see how that works. Like, it is going to be so vicious and so personal, and I don't know. I like the idea of a high road or whatever. I don't think it's going to work for you. I think you're going to find that that high road ends in a cliff. In any event, how will he respond to these new insults? Well, a person familiar with the governor's thinking said he was likely to stick with a measured approach. That means that Republicans hoping for a more aggressive stance by Mr. DeSantis, who is said to be keenly aware of how many of his supporters, also like Mr. Trump, are almost certain to be disappointed. Okay, well then I'm going to counter that by saying, then people who think that Ron DeSantis is going to win this primary are certain to be disappointed, because they worship strength. Big, stupid, bold, fake strength, admittedly. Toxic, self-destructive strength, deranged strength, but some kind of strength. And the measured approach just doesn't seem to be it. Now, really fast, Francesca, to the nature of the insults. You have Meatball Ron. He's an adult. Good. He was the president. And then shut down Ron. That to me seems like, I know that he wants to focus on this pandemic stuff. I really do feel like DeSantis has spent like 3 years at this point trying to convince every Republican in the country that he doesn't care if literally everyone dies from COVID. I feel like if you are a person that doesn't think that COVID should ever be countered in literally any way, you believe that DeSantis is your guy. So what do you think about the strategy of trying to undercut him on like maybe his core appeal, other than, you know, like trying to destroy the LGBTQ community or something like that?
Like calling him, like actually
calling him shutdown Ron, like trying to make make COVID an albatross around his neck.
The biggest thing though on that is that Trump actually believes in the vaccine, whereas we still don't know whether Ron DeSantis believes in it or not. I do think there will be a moment where Trump will say, "Did you get it?" And Ron's gonna have to say, "Yeah." And so then there's that. But like, so it doesn't really work. Trump trying to say, "You shut everything down, but I also want to tout the fact that I rolled out the vaccine," which he should. Mm-hmm. I see it as a misfire, but I am thinking of new names. And I do think that calling him RonCon is a really good, like, call him RonCon. Like, instead of RomCom, RonCon. He's RonCon. And, you know, instead of a meat cute, he's a meatball cute.
I like that. Okay. And it's RonCon. Dumb. So there's like a 25% chance that he will, in fact, do that. Okay, let's shift now to a bit more substance. We're staying in the same block, but apparently one of the strategies that is you're gonna see front and center in this Republican primary as it shapes up in 2024 is much more of a focus on Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, which, good, honestly. I want the Republicans to be fighting about their approach to these incredibly important programs. And it's so weird, but Donald Trump is one of the few Republicans who at least plausibly could pretend to be on the right side of that. And he's apparently expected to start attacking Ron DeSantis about his prior votes on this. Not just about things he might have said about what should happen going forward, but Ron DeSantis is sort of unique compared to a lot of prominent Republicans, including Trump, in that he has an actual voting history. He's been in state legislature, he's been in Congress. He's actually taken stances on things, and that is going to probably bite him in the ass. Because apparently as a congressional candidate, DeSantis repeatedly expressed support for Representative Paul Ryan's proposed overhaul to entitlement programs. I hate that terminology, and I don't like that Insider just uses it. But anyway, by privatizing aspects of Medicare and Social Security, he went beyond that though. He even supported the Republican Study Committee's budget proposal that aimed to balance the federal budget in just 4 years instead of the decade that Paul Ryan was advocating for. To achieve that, the Committee for the Responsible Budget detailed back then required changing Medicare to a partially private system by 2019 and raising the retirement age to 70. It would have also increased the full retirement age for Social Security to 70 as well, All of these are things that will definitely be incredibly popular positions amongst the elderly Republican primary voting bloc. But on top of that, and this is just some of the initial research they've done, they're going to be diving into every vote he's ever taken. He backed a nationwide sales tax to replace the current tax code. That might actually make him popular amongst deranged Republicans. He also voted against renewing the Violence Against Women Act. I just point that out to reasonable people in our audience. I have no doubt that he will be touting that in the primary to come. What do you think?
I mean, I would love to see Republicans go at one another around Medicare or Medicaid and Social Security cuts. Like that is what we've all been waiting for, right? We saw Biden call them out on it on the national stage, the State of the Union address. They booed, saying, "We don't talk about that. Haven't dreamed about that since the inception of the Republican Party." Like they want to. Like Paul Ryan is waiting in the wings, like, "When's it my turn?" You know, he's gonna come back. He's just pumping iron. It's very scary, but like, so I would love to see Trump. And let's be honest, the reason that Trump actually did appeal to the mass of people that he appealed to is because it was really vague, but he said Obamacare is no good. I want to give everyone healthcare. Healthcare is going to be amazing under Trump. We never saw that at all. In fact, then he just denied that a pandemic was happening and, you know, was like, let's shoot bleach into our veins or whatever it was. But like that really helped him. So I would love to see Trump run to his so-called left on this. And I would love to see that become a habit in the Republican Party of them like hitting each other over their past statements on Medicare and Social Security. Yeah. I will believe it when I see it though.
Yeah, and look, we can, you know, as people who have very different opinions than most Republicans of this sort of thing, we can view this and think, okay, if they have this conversation for months publicly, that seems like a good thing because it trains people to be defensive about the future of these programs. And since Democrats don't generally do a good enough job of stressing that, why not have the Republicans assist us? Right. It maybe makes it marginally harder for the Republicans in the future to do those cuts. Although, you know, Donald Trump attacking Ron DeSantis on it, if Donald Trump becomes president and has a Republican Congress and Senate, is Donald Trump then going to veto those changes? That goes a step further, and I would not want to bet my retirement on that. But anyway, it's still better. So, and look, I want primaries to be about substance. I want them to be about the future of these big programs. But I'm also just not entirely sure how much you can trust Donald Trump. Remember, Donald Trump was saying back in the 2016 primary that he was going to advocate for single payer healthcare. Yeah. How did that go?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have single payer healthcare, America? So again, he can take some of these stances, and it's a little bit easy for him because he has no history really, aside from now being president. And he really doesn't care about a lot of this stuff. So it's easy for him to make bold claims or whatever, but that doesn't mean that you can actually trust it.
Well, yeah. If he gets back in office, the last thing I think we should worry about is Medicare and Social Security. Important, but we're gonna have way bigger fish to fry.
Yeah, we'll see. Like whether there will be fish left in the oceans to fry. That was a climate Indeed. Change thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, we're gonna see. See how Meatball Ron deals with it. I'm just trying to test out the nickname and see. I don't like it. It's too long. Meatball Ron.
Ron Con
is good. I like DeSadness. Just think of make it so that great. When everyone thinks of him, they get sad.
Ron DeSadness.
That's how you win this thing. Anyway, with that said, we've only got another minute. So I'm going to read a couple of comments. Lots more to come in the aftermath, everybody. So please stay tuned. And if you're just joining us near the close of the program, please hit the like button. Help juice that algorithm. Ray Pierce, a member for 18 months, says, "Woo, 18 months. I grew up near East Palestine and my family and best friends still live there. My best friend has said that they haven't heard much else on the derailment and I am sure they are desperate for updates." So again, that information is there. They could be providing it. Anyway, with that said, that's all the time we have for our first hour. Thank you everyone watching the linear platforms, listening to the podcast. Much appreciated as always. For those of you on Twitch, YouTube, a bunch of other platforms, there is way more to come in the aftermath, including Ron DeSantis being outed as a hypocrite when it comes to gun rights. So that's a fun one that I'm sure Trump will attack him on. What people think about police reform and Republicans freaking out over child marriage. Stay tuned. We'll be back with that after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.